There is something that Delilah loves more than famous cock. Research. And she doesn't know the real story, but she knows too much.
My mom says hi, by the way,
she sniffs. I push the spinner. Tell her hi back, I say, and I wonder if Love is awake, if Amy is alive. She checks her messages and says she might be getting into an Ed Norton premiere tonight. She wants me to beg her to stay. I don't. She runs her finger along a chute.
So, how did you get into Soho House?
I look at her. Huh?
My friend Ethel saw you there.
Who is your friend Ethel?
Just a friend, she says.
She knows who you are. She's seen you at Bird's. That's kind of creepy. I am being stalked. This is Fast and Furious, and Delilah has her own fucking team. Does she think she can trap me into being her starter husband, her pre-Franco fuck doll?
Joe, she says, where have you been these past few days? Were you on Skid Row?
No.
You need to tell me where you're getting stuff, she says. I know it's not just Dez, because he didn't hear from you these past few days either.
Delilah, I say, it's not like that.
Then tell me who you were with.
I look at the Kandinsky.
Joe, she says, I'm trying to help you, but I can't help you if I don't know where you're getting your drugs.
She's too smart. Technically, I should eliminate her. But if I were to bash Delilah over the head and go out and buy acid and reduce her body and dispose of it, I would attract the wrong kind of attention. Her parents would miss her. She's been asking around about me, so I would be a suspect in her murder. And then when I find Amy, I will have a harder time killing her because I will be under suspicion. There's no way around it. Delilah has to live. And the only way to get her off my back is to break her heart. I pat the chutes and ladders board. Delilah, I haven't been completely honest with you. There's someone else. She swallows. Her cheeks bloat, or maybe they just turn red. I tell her I'm sorry. I tell her I went to Henderson's party to see this other girl.
But she's enabling you, she pushes.
I shake my head. The pills aren't for me. She pulls away.
Then who are they for?
This girl's mom, I say. She has cancer. Esophageal. Delilah closes the board. I'm sorry, I say.
Whatever,
she says, turning her back on me. I tell her I'm horrible. I tell her she is beautiful. I tell her it's my loss. I hold her. I tell her I am a terrible person and I don't deserve her. I tell her she is beautiful again. I tell her she is smart. She could run the world with her connections and her tech savvy. I tell her she is going to wind up with someone much better than me. And this is when she hugs me harder. This is when she forgives me. When I tell her without a doubt that I will be knocking on her door someday when she's living in a big house up in the hills with marble floors and security. I'll be wishing I was in there with her. But I won't deserve to be.
Okay,
she says. She shakes my hand.
Just do me a favor. Don't talk shit about me with Dez and Harvey and these other fucks. They're all just horrible.
You got it, I say. Delilah packs up her stalking devices. She has to go to the Polo Lounge to spy on someone. And when she's gone, I find the YouTube video with me at Henderson's. I look through the comments. User AA212310 writes, murderer in the house right there. User AA212310 does not respond to any of the many people who have asked what she means about murderer. Thought it was suicide. Do you know something? Was he killed? Thought it was orgy. I will not fixate on the fact that the username contains the initials AA. AA means Alcoholics Anonymous, and AA could be anyone, and it's absurd to think it's Amy when Henderson has millions of fans, many who are deranged, possibly in the AA program, with time to spare to go on YouTube and comment. I will not think about Delilah reading these comments, wondering, investigating. I will not fall down the rabbit hole. I did not get caught. I am fine. I am free. The only thing I ever got caught doing is jaywalking. Then my phone buzzes and I get something I've never gotten before. A Facebook message from Love. Okay, I am a total stalker, but I found you here. I'm going to Malibu. It's too hot and I think it would be wrong of me to leave you here in this heat. So this is my good deed of the day. In? It's like she knew about my day, my village nightmare. Like she sensed that all I wanted was a way out, a break. I write back, all caps, yes. She responds, literally in front of your building, #psychokillerqu'est-ce que c'est. She writes again, my French spelling sucks, but my French kissing is good, ha ha. I write back, nothing about you sucks. And of course, it's the truth. I pack a bag and think about Delilah's vacuum mouth and Amy's hungry, hungry hippo, all hands on deck enthusiasm. I will not be getting my dick sucked in Malibu, but I won't have to deal with Delilah. I bring my clothes and my underwear and my computer. I picture Harvey explaining to some new Angelino that this apartment is cursed. The first girl took off, jettisoned her furniture. The next guy, one day he was here, and the next day he was popping pills, allegedly, and then poof, gone. Still, I can't be too needy. I take out a few pairs of jeans. Outside, I search for Love's Tesla, but it's not here. I hear honking, and she's down the street, waving from a Ferrari. I walk to her, and she smiles when I get in. She isn't mad that I bailed on her this morning because of a work thing. She doesn't see it that way at all. I know you have a life, she says. We were in the zone. I had to send like a million emails this morning, so believe me, I get it. Did you get your shit done?
Yep, I say.
Good, she says. Then you can focus on this pantry mix I made for you.
It starts with Charles Mingus, and I feel like a fresh air kid on his way out of the ghetto as we pass Hollywood Lawns and head toward Malibu. I text Calvin. I'm gonna need a few days. I feel like shit. Sorry I was such a dick earlier. Delilah. Ugh. You know the drill. Anyway, I gotta take off for a while. Let me know if anything happens with GFT. Fingers be crossing, C-Money. Talking a few. In New York, when I ran a bookshop, if anyone talked that way to me, they would have been fired. In L.A., I blow off my boss over text and get this in return.
Dude, I think I smoked too much weed. Whoa, peace out. Talk soon.
Living is so easy in L.A., and Love tells me to hang on as we veer onto the 101. Hundreds of cars clog the arteries, and it reminds me of that SNL sketch where they talk about the 101 and the 405. I can't imagine growing up in this madness. In cars. Love's mom calls, and I look at pictures of Love on Facebook. She's at the beach a lot, but she doesn't post full body shots. She drinks, but she never looks wasted. I think I was wrong this morning. I think maybe this is my lucky day. Chapter 23. People who pay thousands of dollars to board glamorous germ boats, aka cruise ships, are trying to embrace a philosophy about life. The idea that it's about the journey, not the destination, so you best enjoy the ride. I have always had a hard time with that philosophy. I am goal-oriented. I put a lot of pressure on myself to be a productive member of society. Even now, I do my best. I keep one hand in Love's vagina and one hand on my phone. I am a multitasker. I don't bask. While Love drives, I review my accomplishments. Because of me, Benji's home soda label was dissolved. Because of me, no publishing houses are wasting electronic ink writing to Guinevere Beck to say no to her stories. And because of me, someone more deserving has Peach Salinger's job. Because of me, Dr. Nikki Angevine is not practicing, not licensed to manipulate patients into blowing him. Because of me, Henderson's talk show does not go on, and someday this moment will be remembered as the initial end of the age of narcissism in America. Because of me, Mr. Mooney was inspired to go away too. He's in Pompano Beach, happy as fuck, banging a broad named Eileen. I also deserve a vacation. I came all the way out here, and as the wind burns my cheeks and pulls my hair back, and as we get closer to the ocean, I decide that this is the road away from everything bad, from Amy, from my self-destructive pursuit of her, from my paranoia and my lies. Everything with love is good, and everything bad is in the past. I look out the window and I let Amy go, let her fall off a ladder into a chute, or let her hang herself with a resistance band. I have better things to do with my time. I put down my phone. Finally, love says. I was starting to worry your eyes were gonna pop out of your head from looking at that thing so much. I know, I say. I had to take care of some work stuff, but fuck it. I'm gonna be here now. She laughs. I like this plan. I like this view, I say. So beautiful, right? I love the Pacific. You've been out here, right? No, I say, not yet. What? She shrieks. Wait, wait, wait. This is your first Pacific Ocean experience? I admit that she is correct, and I love the way love is like love itself, boundlessly enthusiastic. My first time here is her first time here, and she is crazed with joy, veering into the left lane, gunning it, and blocking traffic to squeeze into a space on the shoulder. I thought we were going to your parents' house. We'll go after, she says. After what? After you put your toes in the Pacific, of course. She opens the car and strips off her tiny t-shirt. I'll race ya, she says, and all this time, my whole life, I thought horny white people in bathing suits only raced each other to the water in movies and Don Henley music videos. I let her win, and when I get there, she takes my hand in hers and pulls me in for a kiss. Close your eyes, she says. I hold her hand and close my eyes, and it's not like I'm some poor farm kid from Nebraska. I've been in the ocean, but never like this. The stretch of the shore is so wide. The waves are loud, the seaweed is oversized, like the ocean itself. And then a wave comes and hits us, and I pick her up and run through the wall of white water into the thick of it. Have you been to the Maldives? She asks when we resurface. Don't do that, I say. She looks at me, she wipes her mouth. Do what? You know I haven't been to the Maldives, I say. So don't ask me if I've been to the Maldives. How do I know you've never been to the Maldives? She asks, and she's not being sarcastic. Love Quinn must be the least judgmental woman alive. She swims up to me and embraces me before leading me back to shore. She has towels in the trunk. Are rich people always prepared to get in the water? And puts on a new pantry playlist. The first song is Eric Carmen's Make Me Lose Control. I tell her I love this song, and she says she knows. She says she took some of my songs and some of her songs and made a bunch of infinite musical nesting dolls. I don't know what this means, but she explains that each song mentions other songs. Oh, so after this comes Be My Baby and Back in My Arms Again, I say. She nods. You really are the professor. I wish we could keep going, all the way up north. Through summer, away from Amy, from Henderson, from Delilah, from L.A. But then she puts on her turn signal and veers off the highway. And we take one dirt road to another dirt road until we approach a gate. Hanging over it is a brass sign in the shape of a half moon. The Isles. Your home has a name? She laughs. You know I like to name everything. Love smiles into a camera. And the gates open, and I hear Elvis, Never Been to Spain. And holy fuck. Wow. The road is paved with patchy grass and seashells, and white sand that must have been shipped in from Bermuda, and is shaded by canopies of trees they don't have in Hollywood. We crunch along, passing my box and Ferraris. Are your parents having a party, I ask? Not exactly, Love says as she dabs her lips with gloss. 40's in tonight's episode of True Detective, so my parents got the family together to watch it in the screening room.
He's an actor?
I mean, he's not an actor, she says. He doesn't work that much, just once in a while. I think he and Milo have a friend who was doing music on it and got him on. I don't know.
She sighs and puts her gloss away.
I can't keep up and I don't try to keep up.
She pats my leg.
Don't look so nervous.
I'm not nervous, I say. But I am nervous. I know how to worry about getting betrayed by Amy Adam or judged by the police. I do not know how to worry about being a bookseller on an estate.
You don't have anything to worry about, Love assures me. Everybody already loves you.
A little barefoot girl with a popped collar chases a barefoot boy who will never work in retail or file for unemployment. We've entered some upscale Rob Reiner world of rich white people, and I don't think I've seen children since I was in New York. What strikes me more is the safety. In New York, you're constantly vulnerable. There could always be a psycho on the subway, on the fire escape, in the dark near the stoop. I've had my fair share of mentally ill, potentially violent patrons in the shop. My Hollywood apartment is on the first floor with bars on the window, and I walk to and from work. I get into Uber cars and Lyfts with drivers I don't know, and they could always be crazy. But this is so safe, and it's going to take me a minute to get used to it. The total absence of criminals. We pull over to a sandy embankment, and she leaves the keys on the dash. I offer to help with the bags, but she says, the helpers can do that. And she takes my hand and leads me onto a path that's been landscaped to perfection, to make it seem like God and wind made this when really it was Mexican laborers. We are closer to the water, bright and blue, impossibly close. Just beyond the grass tennis court, green, bright. And Love tells me about the Isles. There are four houses on the property, one grass tennis court, one clay court near the main gate, and two swimming pools. There is a boathouse, and I see the Donzi Love's dad told me about, and I want to drive that thing. I will drive that thing. They have a private beach and a shed that appears to be made of actual gingerbread cookies. A sign on the thatched roof reads, Mini Pantry.
Mini pantry? I ask. Nothing mini going on in these parts.
She squeezes my balls and begins to give me a hand job right here, right now, about 50 feet away from where the kids have set up a lemonade stand. She gets down and feels me up, and maybe this will be when she blows me. We could get caught at any second. I tell her this and she grins. Cheshire. Love strokes me and cups my balls, and I am her clay, and she works her fingers to my bone, and her face is so close. I put a hand on her head, but I don't push. I won't push. I will take the hand job, but the hands make me want the mouth, and I push the littlest bit, and she takes a hand away and opens her mouth. Yes, yes. On the tennis court, someone calls, out. She licks her fingers and palm instead of licking my dick, and she takes that wet hand back to my cock, and I come. She wipes her hands on a palm frond, and I pull my shorts up.
You okay? You seem a little tense, she says.
I shake my head. Of course I am. I was just worried about those kids. She smacks my ass.
Well, even if they did see, they gotta grow up sometime, right?
We walk. No wonder 40 calls me old sport. This place is the Great Gatsby, new and improved. Paul Simon sings. Only it's actually Paul Simon, the human being. He's sitting on a lawn chair, strumming a guitar for Barry Stein and 40. A strange sight in so many ways. Three men, one guitar, no Garfunkel.
Barry Stein knows him, Love explains. Barry Stein knows everybody. I think that's why my parents put up with him.
What do you mean? She tells me that Barry Stein is kind of a self-important douche, but her parents love the movies. Her dad wishes he were in that business, but they don't invest in movies because they're too risky. One of the million maids on staff emerges with a tray of vodka lemonades and mason jars, and Forty is quick to grab two. He offers one to Barry Stein, who shakes him off, and Paul Simon says no too. Nobody wants to drink with Forty, and Love sighs.
I wish Forty would get it. He always thinks Barry is going to produce one of our stories, and it's not going to happen.
Why not? I ask. She laughs.
'Cause they suck?
I love that Love isn't self-deprecating or self-aggrandizing. What I don't love is how she pulls my head towards hers and lifts her iPhone.
Afternoon selfie, she cheers. Hashtag summer of love.
I smile. Cheese.
Chapter 24. Paul Simon left while we were settling into our suite upstairs in the main house, and I'm not used to it. Any of it. Where's the bathroom? I ask Love.
There are some in the cabana and some in the main house, but I love the ones in the blue house, she says.
I try not to seem so astounded, but sometimes the difference is too much.
The French doors of the blue house are open and the bathroom is straight ahead and it's the size of a studio apartment. A fat tabby cat meows and exits. I can try, but I will never be at ease in this. I look outside and watch Dottie hug Pierce fucking Brosnan. A fat child picks his nose. I close the door and sit on the toilet. When I was a kid, my mom used to leave me at Key Foods. Literally just fucking dump me there. She would say we were playing hide and seek, and I knew we weren't, but I would play along. I would hide in the bathroom or sneak upstairs where they paid people to watch out for shoplifters, like Ghetto Casino. The managers all knew me. They knew my mom. They didn't call the cops on her. The nice manager would make me my favorite meal, Encore Veal Parmigiana. Eventually, my mom would come back and slap me hard on the face and scream at me not to run away or pull that shit again. I promised to be a good boy, and the people who worked at the store went along with the charade. I flush and splash cold water on my face. I leave the bathroom, and helpers, Love's word, not mine, circle in Bermuda shorts.
Can I help you? Do you want anything?
Love changed into tennis whites, and she's on the patio by the courts. Forty waves me over and hands me a caipirinha. Milo is here now, too. He's talking to Love, making her laugh. Barry Stein looks up Love's skirt. Fucker. Forty shakes his head.
I told you not to worry about that.
What's Wiano? I ask, nodding toward Milo in his stupid tattered t-shirt.
Wiano Club, he says. And, old sport, I promise you that there is nothing to worry about over there.
Where's Wiano? Forty sighs.
It's nowhere. He claps. So you got any ideas for movies, Professor?
Not really, I say. I watch Milo, the blonde hair on his arms, his chiclet white teeth. The violence in me is like the marketing campaign for Carl's Jr., the way the signs change when they have some new jalapeno fat burger to promote. Instead of killing Amy, I want to kill Milo. Forty crunches on an ice cube.
Oh, come on, he says. You gotta have one idea. Everybody's got one. What's the last great thing you saw?
Nothing, I reply. This guy I work with always forces me to watch all this crap on Funny or Die.
You ever have anything produced? Forty asks.
No, I say, and it would be socially inappropriate to pull Milo by his shirt into the water and drown him. Instead, I play along. I tell Forty about an idea I have where you would show that part of Love Actually where Liam Neeson tells his stepkid that they need Kate and Leo. And then, I say, hoping that Love can hear me, that she'll leave Milo to see what she's missing. Then they're on the couch, only instead of showing that scene from Titanic, you show the scene from Revolutionary Road where Kate and Leo are fucking in the kitchen. Forty cackles. Love doesn't notice.
That is genius. Old sport, you need to make that.
Forty looks to see if Barry Stein has been eavesdropping, but he hasn't. I shrug.
It's just something I think would be funny. You gotta think it's something that will be funny, old sport.
And then Forty has to go field some calls, and he leaves. Love comes over and sits on my lap.
You having fun?
Yes, I say, and I am. With Love on my lap, I am calmer. I can love it here now that she's not talking to Milo. The light in Malibu has power that you can't buy on Instagram. Everyone looks more alive than they did at Chateau, clearer yet grainier. The Isles isn't a home, it is a village, and I wonder if any of the people who work at the pantry know about this place, and if they want to get together and storm the gates. I can picture them all shrieking, "We don't want Love, give us money!" Dottie says we've got to get ready for dinner, and I didn't realize time was passing. Love says that happens in Malibu.
Beach brain.
40 returns, iPad in hand.
Check it out, old sport, he says.
And it's like Calvin Redux. I recognize the Funnier Die logo, and I groan, but 40 promises this is gold. The opening titles roll, followed by Liam Neeson and Son in Love Actually, and my heart rate quickens. That's my idea. And they're on the couch, watching Kate and Leo in Revolutionary Road. My idea. And the screen rolls black and I see words I like. Words that belong together. The way happily married people do. Written and directed by Joe Goldberg. Love is laughing and clapping, and I hug 40 and shake his hand and thank him, but he tells me not to thank him.
This was all you, old sport.
But I didn't do anything, I protest. I just had an idea.
Bullshit, he says. You had an ending. Everyone has a beginning, but you are the guy who knew how it ended.
He hands off my film to Barry Stein. A new life is possible for me, and I see how it is possible to become infected with aspirations. I might be discovered like Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights before he fucks it all up. But Barry Stein calls my video cute. I seethe. Once upon a time in New York, I was different, hot. And in Malibu, according to that dirty old fucker, a purveyor of hokey dated prefab rom-comedies, I am cute. It's a buzzkill. The conversation drifts away from my movie. Barry Stein taps his cigar, then hands them out to Ray, 40, and Milo. He doesn't offer one to me. 40 picks mint leaves out of his teeth and runs his hands through his hair. He is hurt. He didn't like cute either.
So, I have this idea, 40 says, and Barry says he needs to use the bathroom, and Milo needs to find his sunblock, and Love needs to help her mom.
I look at 40.
Cute my ass.
40 smiles.
Right on, old sport. Right on.
He starts telling me about a script he's working on, and I want to believe in us, and I want to believe this is the start of something. But 40's idea is terrible. In the irredeemable, maybe he needs a shrink kind of way, where you know there is no possibility of him ever having any kind of success as a storyteller. Love was right when she said their ideas are terrible. This idea is called the third twin.
Not me and Love, he says. Two guys, identical. They both have tattoos on the backs of their hands from when they were babies, and their mom couldn't tell them apart.
It's a special thing when someone who can't tell a story tries. First, the twins are in their mid-20s, and they're in Los Angeles, and then he's describing a scene on a dark street in New York.
And the title card smashes. Boom! He shouts. The third twin!
Oh, God. We've only just begun. Love and Milo head out to the tennis courts, and I'm in the right place, in the wrong place.
I think you mean triplets, I say. There can't be three twins, but there can be triplets. But that gives a whole plot away, he gasps.
He runs his hands through his hair, and somehow the screenplay moves forward, and we're in Vegas, and The Hangover walks into Scorsese's casino.
You feel me, old sport?
No wonder 40 has never sold a script. I glance at his iPad where he has drawings and notes. Not all messy people are geniuses. Some are just messy. My heart breaks. Vegas, I say. Who's getting married? He stands. He hoots.
You know it. Psychic. Instincts. Professor Old Sport.
He looks around to see if Barry Stein is watching, and Barry Stein is still not watching. On the court, Love allows Milo to drink out of her water bottle. 40 keeps talking, and the third twin emerges out of nowhere in the desert to kill the twin who's driving to Vegas, trying to save his brother's life, and then we backtrack again. 40 forgot a critical scene.
Joe, says 40. Picture this, the third twin, and just call it a fucking triplet, dives into a swimming pool. And we stay with him as he sees the brightness above, the pool party, the music soaring from 8 tracks.
I thought the movie was set in the present. He doesn't miss a beat.
Sometimes, he says. And other times, we're in the future, or the 70s. It's a non-linear narrative.
Love whispers something into Milo's ear.
So, the third twin emerges from the pool, reborn, and this is when it gets scary. You ready for this?
Dottie rings a cowbell, and Love waves at me to come, but she doesn't wait for me when Milo prods her to go inside. I tell 40 we should follow, and he looks at me.
Dude, he says, I got cut.
I raise my eyebrows.
You're not in the episode? My mom digs a celebration. He says, everybody's stoked. They'll watch it. They'll think they missed me. Everybody wins. I mean, I read for it. I could have nailed it, but it's just as well. First agent I ever had, he warned me, as a writer, you can fuck up your shit if you act.
Dottie rings the bell again, and 40 promises we'll be there in 2 minutes. He says we have to run out to pick up a prescription for me, and Dottie says we can send someone to do that, and 40 says it's a new drug, and Dottie sighs.
Be fast, boys.
40 and I walk to the embankment where the cars are all tossed around like hungover partiers. 40 says eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and he settles on his spider. Where are we going? I ask. He grabs the keys and revs the engine.
Mexico, old sport. Mexico.
We leave. Chapter 25. Of course, 40 was being hyperbolic, and we're not actually going to Mexico. We are leaving a paradise of canapes and fish tacos and caipirinhas to go to Taco Fucking Bell. I picture everyone back at the aisles in the screening room. I hope Love isn't sitting on Milo's lap. And why does there always have to be a Benji, a Henderson, a Milo? Milo is going to be a problem. And when I Google him, it's a string of irritating things. Screenwriting awards, contributions to Vanity Fair, his psychotically eligible bachelor status in nylon. I hate knowing that Milo made it in Hollywood, and anyone who says he doesn't get jealous is lying. We pull into Taco Bell and Love texts.
Are you on the way back?
I read it out loud to 40.
Tell her we hit beach traffic.
I look at the open road. Seriously?
You're right, he says. Tell her I'm being an asshole. She'll know what that means.
40, I say. Maybe you should text her.
I'm driving,
he says as he pulls into a spot and turns off the engine.
Seriously, tell her I'm being an asshole. She'll know what that means. It's all good, old sport.
So I tell Love that 40 is being an asshole, and she writes back, and says she will cover, and we get out of the spider and amble across the parking lot into Taco Fucking Bell. Inside, we sit at a booth, and 40 tells me about his other script, The Mess.
It was on the blacker list, he says. That's a more top secret list than the blacklist.
I look at him.
What's the blacklist? He laughs. The best unproduced scripts in town, he says. And the blacker list is the even better scripts. Only like 10 producers get the blacker list, and the mess made it. Cool, I say. And I wonder if school teachers in L.A. ever try to instill modesty in their kids. Forty tells me that The Mess is about a kidnapping. Wow, I say. I've been working on a kidnapping story, too. No Shinola? He asks. He's trying so hard, all the time. I tell him we should read each other's stuff, and he says this is an epic idea, and forwards me The Mess and The Third Twin. I scroll through my own stories in my phone, the ones I write when I can't sleep, when I think about her, about what the fuck happened, when I make like Alvy Singer and try to correct it all with my imagination. I tell 40 about one of my favorite Amy stories, where we go away together and use fake names. Only in this version, I catch her in the cage while she's stealing the books. I lock her up in there and force her to become my slave. Eventually, she falls back in love with me, and we keep using those fake names. We become friends with the people we ripped off in Little Compton, Noah and Pearl and Harry and Liam. 40 calls it Stockholm Syndrome, but he's wrong. She was hoping to get caught. Ah, he says. Naughty girl, nice again. This is why people like writing. You visit old friends without having to go on Facebook and see what they're up to and deal with what idiots call FOMO. You make them into what you want them to be, the people they could be if only they were braver, smarter. What's this script called? He asks. Fakers, I say. But at this point, it's really more of a description of a story than a story. I haven't worked it all out. Every story begins as a story, he says, as if this makes any sense. Hollywood. He tells me to check out The Mess. Great minds, he says. The Mess is very much on theme with your fakers. You want me to read it now? Send me your fakers, he says. He pops a pill. I'm in no rush to get back to the fucking aisles. Believe me, we're not missing anything. Bueno. I say, because that's what a dickwad successful L.A. writer like Milo would say. We read. We both agree that our respective works are genius. 40 is blown away by my vision and fakers, and I give it right back to him. I claim to be impressed by structure and The Mess, even though The Mess is incoherent nonsense. And this is when I know I've caught aspirations. Nothing good can come from them. I knew this before I moved here. Already, I have violated Mr. Mooney's advice. I am not getting my dick sucked. I fucked an actress. I swam in a pool. But I also know the way it felt to see those words on the screen of 40's iPad, written and directed by Joe Goldberg. I need 40 to get my foot in the door and show Milo how it's done. I sure as hell need more than a cute, funny-or-die video to put that pompous fucker in his place. And I read enough acting manuals to know that you don't get anywhere here unless you know someone. Now I do. I know 40 Quinn. I tell him we could combine The Mess and Fakers, and his eyes bulge. Super script, he says. Fuck yes! The bones are there. Let's do it, I proclaim. Should we get our agents on the horn, he asks. Instead of admitting I don't have an agent, I tell him we should wait. Let's make sure we have something great first, I say. We only get one shot here. He slaps my back. Wise move, Professor. We agree to wait until the scripts are in the hopper until we tell anyone. Love, agents, anyone, everyone. I don't want anyone to tell Milo that I'm trying to do anything. I want to tell that fucker that I did something. Also, Hollywood is stupid, so if our scripts don't sell, then it will be like we never failed. 40 slaps my back, and we head to the counter. Make it real with a meal, he says. And I take in the menu. Doritos Locos Tacos. Gorditas. Something called a quesarito that was not concocted by an abuela in Mexico City, but by a corporate scientist in the middle of America.
Forty starts talking chalupas with the stoner at the register. Then we go into the kitchen so he can introduce me to his amigo supremo, Chef Eduardo. Forty orders a ton of food. Dos, loaded potato grillers, and tres gorditas, one beefy five-layer burrito, and all the fire sauce that you can spare. While we wait for the bill, he reaches into his pocket and takes a bump of blow, and I am officially living in less than zero. The guy at the counter smiles.
That's $39.82.
Thanks, bro, Forty responds.
Don't forget our fire sauce.
He whistles.
Eduardo, he hollers. You gotta tell the brass that they need a tip option here. How am I supposed to tip you boys?
Eduardo laughs.
You funny, Mr. Forty.
Eduardo is probably Forty's closest thing to a true friend, and Forty takes out a $100 bill and crumples it and pretends to sneeze and throws the $100 over the counter. The guy at the register has seen this before, and he laughs and says what Eduardo said, what Forty likes to hear.
Thank you, Mr. Forty.
Forty nods, and we go back to our booth and treat the third twin like it's redeemable, even as I kill his ideas and recreate it from scratch. Take it to the desert, I say. The third twin is an interloper who shows up and fucks it all up for the twins. Forty nods, hooked. You can tell he goes back and forth between thinking of Milo and himself as the third twin, and I am suddenly so happy I am an only child. Now, the twins have their lives set, but this fucker messes with everything. I go on. He screws their women and messes with their jobs, and yet it's all fucked up because he betrays both twins, and it turns out they're not as close as they thought they were.
Ah, he says. Act two.
And then eventually, the twins find a way to trust each other. They're sure that it's them, the originals, so they make a plan and they bring the third twin to Vegas. Forty pounds the table.
Location shoot, I love it.
But they don't get there, I tell him. Idiot. They pull off the road and they knock out the third twin and leave him for dead.
Fuck, he says. That's dark.
But then, I grin, last shot of the movie, high above, you see the car pull over, and a body is thrown onto the side of the road. Forty's eyes gleam.
The third twin fucked them both.
I nod. There's your movie. Forty says this could work, and he tears into a packet of fire sauce and squirts it into his mouth.
Next up, he says, the mess.
He thinks it's Tarantino meets Nora Ephron in a classic kidnapping caper. But I've read it, and Forty isn't a writer. He just likes to put names together. Of course, it's a Vegas story. Forty will do anything to go to Vegas. But the characters are all over the place, and sometimes the kidnapper is the guy, and sometimes it's the girl, and it jumps around. Drugs. But I can fix this. I'll just replace it with my fakers. He clicks his jaw and leans back in his seat.
Oh, boy, he says. There is one thing I didn't think about.
What? I ask.
Can we do what happens in the booth stays in the booth?
I nod. Fuck yes.
Love got pissed about the mess last time around. She thought it was about her.
Now I'm listening. I wipe my mouth. Why did she think it was about her? Forty sighs and pulls back the curtain. He explains that Love's a relationship girl and she's incapable of being single, which is why she married young and fast, married again.
And then, after the doc died, he shakes his head. Man, she was a wreck. Like worried that she was toxic. If she's not divorced, she's widowed, and all she wants is to be with someone.
I don't think she's like that. Maybe she was, but she's not anymore.
Uh-huh. Anyway, he says, she swore she would never go out with anyone again unless it was gonna last forever. So I used to joke that the next time she meets someone, we just gotta, like, tie him up and trap him in the aisles so he can't go away, can't pull bad shit, can't go to the doctor and find out he's got cancer. he laughs. So anyhow, that's sort of an inspiration point for the mess.
Wow, I say.
He smiles. You're freaking out.
In the good way, I say. And it's true. I feel special. Love was hunting for something real, and she found it, and it's me, and it's early and absurd, and we've known each other a few days, but fuck, it feels good to be wanted.
This is all good by me, I say. I'd just as soon never date anyone but love again, but please don't tell her I said that.
Of course not, he says. I would never. And I mean that both ways. I would never settle down in my 30s, and I would never tell love that I told you that she wants to settle down.
So Milo, I say, the itch that can't be scratched. There's really nothing between them? I mean, nothing recent?
40 sighs.
It's all so boring, he says. You have to understand my sister. She is deeply, profoundly, erotically, supremely, wholly sexual.
I nod.
Okay.
So if you mean to ask, did they ever hook up? Well, obviously yes, he says. Back east, 100 years ago, when we were babies. But I assure you, old sport, the girl does not love the boy.
He leans in and burps.
Don't take this the wrong way. But love only likes guys who are rough around the edges, you know? Wrong side of the tracks.
I can't believe people still use that expression, but before I can respond, 40 claps his hands.
Back to the good stuff.
Meaning business, and he says that Plan B is all over him for a new draft of The Mess, and this is L.A. where everyone is always making everything up. But I like the idea of being 1 degree of separation away from Brad Pitt.
The food comes, and the burritos smell like the gorditas, smell like the grillers, taste like the chalupas, and I don't know why we got so many different things when 40's intention was to smother all of it in fire sauce, an unsophisticated simple heat that drowns out whatever meats and cheese and veggies were defrosted and packed into these tortillas. The only saving grace is that we're facing the Pacific Ocean. 40 eats like a starving orphan. Giant bites that make his cheeks flare. He never makes eye contact while he describes, in vivid detail, his bungalow at the Bellagio, his gift for counting cards, his passion for the moment, and his adoration of the 70s. It's a truth that most people never want to own up to, that some people were born at the wrong time. 40 would have been better off in the 70s, before AIDS and Twitter, when it might have been enough to have cool jeans and a great Coke connection and a slight resemblance to Hopper, Nicholson, fucking DeVito. I feel extremely sorry for 40, because without a time machine, he will never be happy. We finish gorging and head outside to the spider. 40 doesn't start the car.
Here's the thing, old sport, he says.
He pops the glove box and pulls out an envelope.
I met a very kind blackjack dealer this past week.
He lowers his voice.
I am flush, and I am on deadline to get the third twin to my guys at Sony, and I can't have you slowed up because of that day job you have.
He hands me the envelope. It's full of cash. I'm okay, I say. I don't want his charity.
It's nothing. He says, it's 10K I honestly forgot about.
He left $10,000 in the glove box. Rich people. Stupid people.
Love is going to wonder where it came from, I point out. He has an answer for that.
You're dealing in books, he says. You're a noble small businessman with an admirable work ethic and a solid startup business. You are, therefore, the farthest thing in the world from a gold digger.
I've been waiting for him to use that phrase, and I was going to keep working anyway because I am not a fucking gold digger.
I get it, I say. Right. You throw pages at me, and I'll do my thing in them, and we'll get a round robin going. Bang these babies out by the end of the summer. Make the rounds and pitch them when the kiddies go back to school. Sound good?
I can get started right away, I say. He winks. We're both aware that this partnership is a bit corrupt. But what union isn't inherently uneven in some way?
I don't know any perfect couples, true partners who share the load equally. He asks me to hand him a bottle of codeine that's on the floor, and it's disgusting in here. Taco Bell wrappers and muddy bottles of Sprite, Fanta. 40 is a fuck-up. Drug dependent, living in a past that wasn't even his in the first place. When we're featured in Variety, I'll be the hot one, and he'll be the other one. He sips his medicated Fanta and starts the car. We might die on the way back to the aisles, but we also might live. We're singing along to the fucking Eagles when we take the sharp left into the estate. 40 hits the brakes and lowers the volume.
One thing, he says. My parents are Quakers about my gaming. They call it gambling, as if I'm a sorority girl from Pennsylvania who can't count cards, so let's not mention my score.
Deal, I say.
One more thing, he says, and I hate when people do that.
He pours the rest of his lean onto the grassy sand, and I imagine the squirrels stoned.
If you hurt my sister, I'll fucking kill you.
It's the first time I respect him. We pull up the driveway and half the cars are gone. We missed most of the party and Milo fell asleep on a chaise lounge and he's an ugly sleeper. Another win. 40 goes to his bungalow and I go to Love's. The upstairs bedroom is a dream. A topsy-turvy place with a sodded terrace. Love says they copied it from a resort in Maui. I walk outside because I have never stood on grass in the sky and she asks me to come to bed.
40 got cut from True Detective.
She breathes me in.
You smell like a taco.
Guilty, I say.
It's really great of you to go with the flow, she says.
40 gets bummed when he gets cut, and I feel like if you weren't here, he might have disappeared to Vegas or something.
Thank you.
He's a good dude.
She kisses me. I think he needs a break from it, she says. That stupid business is poisoning him, and he should just be here this summer, not trying to cast that thing that's not even done.
I squeeze her hand. So let's do it. Let's stay.
What about your job? She asks.
I tell her I'm selling more valuable books on my own than I am at the store. I can set up a P.O. box and form an LLC and go for it. Love is thrilled for me and says I can borrow an old Prius no one uses anymore so I can hit estate sales and stock up on merchandise. I love that she thinks this is a wonderful idea, and I love that she does not use the phrase yard sailing. She kisses me. She straddles me. And I live here now, in Malibu, in Love. Hunting season is over. I will not think of Amy. I will not worry about Amy. I will not beat myself up. Now it's time to rest. That's what you do when you find love. Amy couldn't. I can. I'm the lucky one. Not her.
Chapter 26. 2 weeks into the summer of love, and there's only one time of day I dread. Tennis time. You have to understand, I am living in a dream world. Every morning begins with love riding my dick. After we fuck, I put on one of the new shirts I bought at the stupid expensive stores on Abbot Kinney in Venice and drive to Intelligentsia and buy an overpriced coffee. I sit with my back against the wall of this Coliseum-style coffee shop, so austere, so clean, so California cold that you never see anybody smiling, and you get dirty looks for ordering iced coffee. I go back and forth between working on The Mess and The Third Twin, and then, around lunchtime, I mail books if I have inventory that moved. Then, every day at 4 p.m., I wish for rain so I can get out of tennis time. I suck at tennis. My forehand is too big and the balls go soaring over the fence. My one-handed backhand never makes contact. My two-handed backhand makes 40 piss his madras shorts. Sometimes Milo is here, calling out, "Loosen your grip, kid!" And sometimes Love walks all the way around to my side of the court as if I'm a fucking child. Today it's just me and Love because Love's parents have gone to Europe and 40 and Milo are out on the Donzi.
Love is feeding me balls, and I am missing them or whacking them to China, and finally we decide to just walk on the beach.
Okay, she says when we reach the water. I just need to say that I know you hate tennis, but you wouldn't hate it so much if you actually tried to get better. And I love you, but you are stubborn, and I've never seen anyone refuse to get better at something. You need to make an effort.
I look at her. I heard all of it. She's right. And buried in there, in the middle of all her earnest frustration, there were three little words. She didn't mean to say it. I mean, I have been feeling it, the love. But I wouldn't say it either, not this early. We've only had 2 weeks. And yet in 2 weeks, we have built a thing between us, a bridge, a shorthand, and I never had this with anyone. Amy and I had sex and heat. Beck dangled a carrot and I bit. But love and I grow the carrots, peel them, and eat them together.
Look, she cries, pointing to a dolphin out in the ocean. Did you see it?
Yeah, I say. I see it. And don't worry. I got a gun. She bursts out laughing and falls back onto the sand, and I laugh too, and she rolls onto her side, giggling, and I smack her ass, payback. And that's all it takes with love, one joke, one smack, and she's slipping out of her little skirt and climbing onto me and pulling me out of my shorts and holding my head by the temples and looking into my eyes close.
Are you deaf? She asks.
No, I say. I was being nice.
Well, don't be, she says.
Okay. I love you too, I say. She kisses me as my cock delves into her, and we are perfect together. And I am better for knowing her, and I'm still convinced that there's a special department in heaven where they build vaginas. And if you're lucky like I am, one day you happen upon the one that was built for you. I tell her this when we finish, when we're lying there on the sand.
You should write, she says. You say some good, weird shit sometimes.
I want to tell her that I do write, but it can wait. Thanks, I say. Maybe I will. She nudges me. I turn to her. She smiles.
You realize you still have to get back out on the court, right?
Yes, the summer of love is a dream. My skin is glowing thanks to Henderson's products and fucking love. My screenplays are coming together. 40 and I meet at Taco Bell every couple of days to talk about our work. He reads, he raves, and then he tells me the buzz he's building. I really am proud of myself that I'm finally on a true vacation. You can't even call the screenwriting work. I love it too much. I'm better at tennis after Love's big lecture. And I almost think it's a good thing that she won't suck my dick, because if she did, I might become so happy that I wouldn't be me anymore. The Corinthians are right, and love is patient. We go horseback riding, and I don't know how to ride a fucking horse, so here we are again, love teaching me.
Robert Redford is a good learning horse, she says.
Robert Redford? I ask, and her mom named all their horses. Love says it's a miracle they're not all named Robert Redford.
My mom is kind of obsessed with him, she explains.
We trot along, and now she wants to know how I lost my virginity, and I tell her to go first.
It was with Milo, she says. We were staying on his family's boat, and we're docked at Wiano Club, and the three of us, me and 40 and Milo, we used to sneak out and steal the flags off the golf course.
That's why he's always wearing those shirts, Martha's Vineyard, yacht clubs, all that cocky pink and green.
And then one night, Milo was like, let's hide from 40 and freak him out. And then, you know, and it was terrible, and it hurt. And did I mention that it hurt?
She gazes upward, and all the pain in her life, she's found a way to process all of it.
And then 40 got nailed for stealing the flags.
She laughs. And of course, the three of them collectively refer to that night as the night they all got nailed. And I am so happy I grew up poor and that there is nothing so cute about my coming of age. Love elbows me.
I showed you mine, she says. Your turn.
Well, I say. I was having dinner at Chateau Marmont, and this waitress came up to me with a piece of paper. She smacks me.
That's not funny.
I shrug. She pats my leg.
When you're ready, she says. No rush.